Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here, you need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Today on the show, we're doing, I think for the first time in almost 2 months, one of my favorite shows, Jeffrey Wright, formerly of the Oxford Exxon podcast, formerly of the Beer Garden, formerly of RebelGrove.com, now at, is it 92.9 ESPN Memphis, right?
That is the one.
Does a fantastic job there, primarily on the Jeff Calkins show, but he does all the other shows too. And as always, we're excited about Jeffrey's success and happy to have him back here on the Beer Garden. We'll get to Jeffrey in a moment. First, let me tell you, we're brought to you, obviously, by the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford, just next door to the Oxford Exxon. The Mix 5 for 5 right now, you can still get it with the Spicy Chick. So you can mix that in with your regular stuff. The Spicy Chick, the Crystal Chick, you can get the ice cream. In fact, you can shake up your combo for $1. You get an Oreo shake, a strawberry shake, all of that. They still have the Chick Sunriser combo available in original or spicy. If you have a little craving for chicken for your breakfast, they've got there at Crystal. And as of this weekend, you can text WWE2K18 to 35350 for a chance to win a trip to a WWE event and delicious frozen treats from Crystal. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio, Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. No haggling. And once you get your quote, you can shop it if you want to. You're wasting your time. What you need to do is let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many listeners of this podcast, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's super easy, and at the end of the deal, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, and just for that, took, what, 4 seconds of your time or less? $500 off the already great bottom line. Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. Jeffrey, how are you?
Man, I'm doing well. You know, you and I were talking about this because you and I still keep up, and I still follow the site. I think you probably have had the experience where even though you're no longer part of something, you put a lot of hard work into it and a lot of time, and you know, you still care about, you know, I imagine like for you when you were on the Auburn beat, you know, after you stopped covering Auburn, I still imagine you still kept pretty good tabs on Auburn because, you know, that was part of your life and that was something that you invested a lot of time in. So I've certainly been following the site. It's always great when I'm listening to the shows and I hear new sponsors. I always get fired up for y'all that the business is growing, because I got to imagine for you, this is a interesting time, to say the least.
You know, it's funny. I've thought about you quite frequently during the last couple of months.
Go on.
We've talked about this on the show a couple of times even. There were times, as you well remember, when you were just getting started with us and you had some pretty strong opinions on Hugh Freeze and where things were headed. And we would have to be like, hey, man, we just can't go there right now. And at first I thought, hey, it's personal for some reason. And then over time I started thinking, boy, I bet he's on to something. And there's been times that I've thought, boy, if Jeffrey were still with us right now, he would be biting his tongue every day wanting to go, told you so, told you so, told you so.
Yeah, I wanted a parade on the Thursday when the news broke. That didn't occur because I got to tell you, my phone just lit up. And
you think?
Yeah, it lit. Well, I mean, it obviously lit up when the news was breaking. But then, you know, you get the people that and I give them credit. There are a lot of people that held the same notion that you held initially, which was this is just personal. And it is weird. This was what I was thinking about. And this is probably something with human nature. And I started thinking about it on the way into work today. So often when someone has an opinion that you disagree with, for whatever reason, human nature is to just say, well, it's personal. Like, break it down to even like the fan level. It's like, well, if I say Hugh Freeze's offense is stupid, people would think it was personal because of some, you know, people would tie it back to Memphis. Like, well, he went to MUS, he hates Briarcrest. It's like, no, I think the offense was stupid because he was pulling guards left and right when defensive linemen are so much more athletic in the SEC, and it doesn't make sense. And it used to drive me insane when Matt Luke would take all the brunt of it. When I'm sitting there going, listen, Matt Luke's not calling the blocking schemes. This is Hugh Freeze's offense. Like, you can get mad at the inability to run the football, but it's the offense. And everyone goes, well, the offense has worked before. Well, yeah, it works at levels where there's not the discrepancy between athletic ability between offensive linemen and defensive linemen. It works great in the Sun Belt. It works great in the MAC. To an extent, it can work in the Pac-12, but even when you watch the way they run the ball, they don't run the ball like Hugh Freeze did. And it's those types of things where people want to immediately just say, well, it's personal. And it's like, on the flip side, if, you know, I make a comment that I think Dan Mullen runs a good offense given his talent, it's like, well, you just hate Hugh Freeze. It's like, no, I actually think if you look at Dan's body of work, given his talent pool, he's pretty good at getting the most out of it. It's the same thing with David Cutcliffe, I've always said. Like, David Cutcliffe is able to move the football with inferior talent. And that doesn't come from a place of benevolence towards Dan Mullen, a place of benevolence towards David Cutcliffe, or on the flip side, a piece of dislike from Hugh Freeze. And, you know, some people will chalk it up to, well, it's just you're arguing with dumb people. No, half the time I'm having these arguments with my family. Like, think about that. Like, I love my family. Like, that's all you got at the end of the day. And so you have these types of discussions, and it is this weird reality where I think I'm well equipped to deal with it, because I think you can attest, I got some pretty thick skin, and it's just weird to have anytime you're paid to make observations and give opinion. And it's like, if we've changed this idea where it works both ways. If I write something or say something that people agree with, it's spot on. Like, great. Yeah, that great piece, great post, or, you know, whatever it is, you know, great. Like, great is always the word. And then if you disagree, it's, well, you just hate Ole Miss, or you hate Hugh Freeze, or you hate whatever it is. It becomes that way. It's like, well, really, when they say is you hate something, they just say I disagree. And I understood that people disagreed with what I thought about Hugh Freeze, but, you know, all of us have certain skills, and I do think one of my skills has always been I'm pretty quick to make a pretty accurate judge on people, good and bad. And I mean, I'll break it down further. This is where I came in with Hugh Freeze. When I started covering the guy for you, my first thought was, you know what? I don't know if this guy's going to be a great coach. Because keep in mind, they went 6-6. They had the big recruiting class. But the next year, they just went, what, 8-5? I mean, it was like a 7-5 football team. I think they won their bowl game, went 8-5. And yeah. I remember thinking, like, you know, I don't know if this guy's going to get it done or not. But, like, to me, one thing that always stood out to me was the fact that when you looked at the way that his daughters revere him. And I remember thinking about one time wanting to write him a note and just saying, you know what? At the end of the day, if I ever get to the point of fatherhood, I hope that my children look at me the same way that yours look at you. And like, I went from that to being completely and utterly flabbergasted that Ole Miss made this decision to stick with this guy that was deeply flawed, as all of us are. I don't take anything away from that. And it just never made sense to me why the answer was so simple, that the target of the investigation was Hugh Freeze. And it just perplexed me why Ole Miss continued to just go down this path when there was a clear, easy out. Like, I get it. It wasn't a great choice because he won a lot of big games. I mean, there's no getting around that. I mean, what's the stat? Like, he beat more top 10 teams in his first 4 years than Ole Miss beat in like the previous 35. Like, there's no getting around that. Like, I understand that to an extent.
Sure.
But at a certain point, the decision becomes bigger than a man, the decision becomes, all right, we got to do what's in the best interest of this football program. And no one was making that decision. It just, it baffled me for, you know, months that honestly turned into years.
Do you think Ole Miss doubled and tripled down on Hugh Freeze because they couldn't afford to get rid of him without a lock? They didn't have it locked down. In other words,
sure,
you couldn't fire him for cause based on the recruiting stuff and then turn around and say all of that stuff's not right.
Yeah.
So they almost had to stick with him, but maybe they shouldn't have been so reverent in the way that they did it. I mean, it's one of these deals. People keep always say, why did they stick with him? And my answer is always, well, that's a really complicated question, but you might have a much more clear answer than I have.
It's why when everyone makes the retort, like when the dust settles, this is going to make a great 30 for 30. I disagree. This is going to make for an unbelievable miniseries. And because it is so complicated. Like, take it, you know, let's go back to what I think was the day that Ole Miss made their biggest mistake, in my opinion. The Egg Bowl in 2014. Ole Miss comes to Hugh Freeze with their initial offer. I'm of the opinion, and I think you would agree with me, Ole Miss figured they'd pay him around $3.5 million. And Ole Miss knew at that time they probably couldn't go much higher than $3.5 million, maybe could go to $4 million. And I'm of the opinion Ole Miss offered him somewhere, you know, don't hold me to this, but they offered him somewhere around $3 million either before the Arkansas game or right around that Arkansas game. And Hugh got insulted by the offer. And I'm of the opinion Ole Miss went in like it was a negotiation in which they would come in with three. Sexton would either come in with, you know, somewhere between four and four and a half. And when the dust settled, they'd meet somewhere around 3.75. And he gets insulted by the offer. And instead of countering, he basically at that moment made the decision to go to Florida. Where I think Ole Miss screwed up was they let that Egg Bowl, and you and I were there. That is still the atmosphere of that game I will never ever forget, because it was strange, because everyone that had a pretty good pulse on the program was convinced that Hugh Freeze was leaving. The players were convinced Hugh Freeze was leaving. I know CJ Johnson was, and you know, I know guys were convinced that he was leaving, and they made the decision that they were just going to beat Mississippi State. Whatever happened afterwards. And it was a big emotional win. And after that game, that scene in the press, whatever, the Manning Center after the game, is still one of the most emotionally charged scenes I've ever seen. And I'm of the opinion that some boosters decided on that day, no matter what, we got to keep Hugh Freeze. And I think that was the worst decision because...
Yeah, because there were people in the administration...
Yes.
On Friday night. I'm trying to do this, you know, because it's so easy, and I've already violated it a little bit a couple of times.
In fairness, I did tell you, you can tell everyone. I told you this when it happened. This was my opinion.
You did. And on that Friday night, I sent a text to someone close to Freeze. The response that I got was vague enough to be interpreted in different ways, but was clear in what it was trying to tell me. It was essentially, yeah, he's gone. And I asked some people at Ole Miss, hey, are y'all trying to keep him, whatever? And one of the quotes that I got from someone over there, kind of on background, off the record a little bit, was basically, look, we've done all we can do. It'll be okay.
Yes, and to me, that's the mistake on two fronts. And
yeah, I agree with you. They made a mistake in going back and going, oh God, you won this big game. Here's all this money. And he made a mistake from a career standpoint, letting that game dictate what he was going to do, because everybody would have been better off had he gone to Florida.
Hugh Freeze is better off if he goes to Florida, and Ole Miss is better off if he goes to Florida for two reasons, in my opinion. Number one, I think if he would have gone to Florida, the NCAA stuff would have ended. They probably wind up with Jim McElwain. Jim McElwain would have got to Ole Miss and realized the same thing that Hugh realized, which is Devontae and Ryan aren't the guy. The only option was to go get Chad Kelly. Jim McElwain would have gone and gotten Chad Kelly. Like, he had no choice but to go get Chad Kelly because Chad Kelly was going to Indiana. So he would have gone and gotten Chad Kelly. Do they beat Alabama at Alabama? I don't know, but I don't think they lose to Memphis, and I don't think they lose to Arkansas if Jim McElwain's the coach. And so he's able to build upon that roster. He would have probably been able to sustain. I don't know if he recruits at the same level that Ole Miss does, but I will also say this. I bet Jim McElwain would have done – I bet the roster would have been more complete if Jim McElwain and his staff were recruiting to Ole Miss, because part of Hugh's downfall, in my opinion, is he was a star effer in every sense of the word, and recruiting and in his personal life. And if he had the choice between going and getting, you know, a Jannard Avery or, you know, another four-star receiver, he was going to get the four-star receiver. And, you know, that's his prerogative. And then when you get the people that say, well, he didn't really have control of the defense, BS, you're the head coach. At the end of the day, if you want to offer Jannard Avery, you can offer Jannard Avery.
And of course, so, you're the head coach. You make that call.
Yes. And so
that's a cop out.
Yeah. That drives me insane. It's like, well, you're the one that gets the win-loss record. So that's your call. It's your program at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
So there's a chance where you could have had an out. Okay. Then let's look at the political situation that's surrounding Ole Miss at the time. Dan Jones, who was popular through a PR campaign that, in my opinion, a backdoor PR campaign that was probably, you could trace back to Hugh Freeze. You get Vitter coming in, who's unpopular just because he wasn't Dan Jones, and now he's probably unpopular, probably through his handlings of certain situations. But you look at it, and Vitter arrives with this NCAA issue, and I think he's smart enough to know, because I don't think it was that difficult of a conclusion to reach. The answer to this is to get rid of Hugh Freeze. However, at that time, politically, he can't make that move. Ole Miss is on the rise. He's hot. And most importantly, Hugh Freeze didn't have support of every booster, but he certainly had the support of the most influential boosters. And he had convinced them they could not win without him. And by the way, that's life. That's the way that life works. And I don't think that's a bad thing inherently. In fact, I think that's a smart thing. And so you have this weird situation where the best answer is not the answer that those with the money want. And the golden rule always applies. He who has the gold makes the rules. I mean, it sucks, but that's the way that it is. And so you're left with this weird situation, and then, you know, you end up backing him. And so I think they kind of backed themselves into a prisoner's dilemma later on, in which everyone, even after the, you know, after last year in the 5-7, I think most people would recognize, all right, well, the answer is to get rid of Hugh Freeze. But you had this weird dilemma where the boosters don't want to do it, and Hugh Freeze obviously doesn't want to do it because of the payday. And you're left in this weird spot where everyone is just kind of operating in his own best interest. And it just resulted in a do nothing mentality. And then for public appearances, they had to back him because at that point they weren't going to fire him. And so that kind of backs them into this corner. And so when they're in this corner, they're left with, well, what do you do? And, you know, at the end of the day, someone, in my opinion, needed to step up and make sure that when they go to the Committee of Infractions that Hugh Freeze wasn't the head coach. I think it should have been done well before that. There's no reason why Hugh Freeze, in my opinion, should have ever been at Media Days. And if Ole Miss couldn't figure out that that was going to be, you know, it wasn't a disaster for them, but you and I were there, man. It was the most awkward Media Day experience I've had when Hugh Freeze was there. And you're left with these weird situations, and then the opportunity came, in my opinion, thanks to the help of Houston Nutt. But I think the powers that be that knew what the answer was, which was getting rid of Hugh Freeze, I think they viewed that as, this is go time. We have to make this happen.
Yeah, saved a lot of money.
$16 million. And now you're in a position where I know the NCAA's response came out yesterday, and you and I, to no surprise of our own, the investigators have doubled down on what they believe was a proper investigation. Ole Miss believes that it was not a proper investigation. And, you know, you're left to go, and you go before what's supposed to be a neutral third party, and it's game on.
So many futures are going to be determined in Covington, Kentucky next month. It's amazing how many people, their legacies, their careers, their livelihoods, because there doesn't appear to be a lot of middle ground.
No.
Here's two sides dug in. I mean, and now exemplary cooperation, we've talked about that for years to the point of it being nauseating. That's the NCAA claims that's out. The investigators.
Well, clarify for me. The investigators claim that that is out, yeah. Correct? That doesn't mean that the Committee of Infractions will agree, correct?
Right, that's correct. The Committee on Infractions could come back and say, you know, Ole Miss cooperated in exemplary fashion. You know, go jump off a bridge. But they could. The NCAA investigators are saying that they should not be given credit for exemplary cooperation, that they should be hit with failure to monitor and lack of institutional control. If the NCAA investigators get their wish here, it's chaos on Ole Miss's end.
Yeah, if the NCAA investigators get their wish, we had this discussion on Jeff's show today. You hate to speculate about someone, as you mentioned, livelihood, and you know they've got families too, but I mean, somebody has to be held culpable, and I mean, does Ross Bjork survive becomes the first question.
2-year bowl ban, I would say no.
I mean, I hate...
One-year bowl ban, I think he not only survives... This is what I kind of mean, and I could be dead wrong, okay? But if you told me 1-year bowl ban, a couple more scholarships that basically, quote, win, end quote, in Covington,
yep.
I think not only does Ross Bjork survive, I think he walks out of there, and I'm obviously being hyperbolic, and I'm being figurative, but he walks out of there with big boy pants on. He walks out of there as the voice. He's the guy. He's it. I think he walks out of there, Jeffrey, with the ability to go, okay, we're doing a coaching search here over the next couple of months, and I'm the one doing it. This is my call. The good old boys can exit stage left. This is my baby. I'm going to hire my guy, and you're going to like it.
I completely agree.
If they get a 2-year bowl ban, I don't see how he's there at Thanksgiving.
No, I mean, to me, I just don't see any other conclusion. However, I admit, you know, I didn't think that Ole Miss would hold on to Hugh Freeze as long as they did. So it is a, you know, I don't mean this as a slight, and I'm sure people will take it as one, but I don't mean it. I'm saying from my observation, it is a strange place to cover because there is a dynamic there that there's a desire to want to be a big boy, but in my opinion, the actions do not live up to the talk.
It reminds me, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I remember with Alabama for years and years and years, Alabama would talk about wanting to get back to, you know, national dominance and stuff, but what people really didn't want to do what it took to get back to national dominance. They still wanted to be access to practice and access to the coach and all of that. And when the Saban thing got real, there was definitely a moment of truth at Alabama where Mal Moore, the late Mal Moore, then the AD at Alabama, had to tell some of the big boosters and stuff, hey, do you want to win or do you want to keep your seat? Which is it? Because if you want to keep your seat, we're not going to get him because he's not going to play your games.
I ask but you if, this.
But if we get him, we're going to win.
What was
and they chose winning.
What was it like after Saban goes 6-6 and loses to Monroe? What was the atmosphere around then?
No, but you could tell they were recruiting at a different level. You knew winning was coming. Winning was coming. It was just there was some frustration that it took a year, but I think generally people knew Saban was great that year. That's the wrong word, but he was excellent that year in letting people know this isn't going to last. If you read between the lines, you heard him say, basically, I've got a bunch of guys who have been coddled and they're not buying into what I'm doing. The younger guys are buying in. We're about to go recruit some studs. They'll buy in. Don't worry about this. This is a bump in the road. But some of these older guys, it's too late for them. He basically said it. And that rubs some people the wrong way, but you could see it happening. And then sure enough, the next year they were really good.
Yeah, and to me, this is where, when you mention, you know, Ross Bjork's future. All right, let's say some, I guess I'll phrase it this way. Is there anything, in your opinion, that could develop before September 11th that could shape the way that this case goes? Because right now it appears there's two arguments. They are polar opposites, and you do believe so.
Yes.
So to me, it comes down to as simple as this. Ole Miss has a side. The NCAA has a side. Inevitably, as most things in life, it's going to come down to somewhere in the middle. And to me, somewhere in the middle is a win for Ole Miss and a win for Ross Bjork. And I don't know if he walks out, having a proverbial parade, but he walks out, in my opinion, with a position in November where he can, in my opinion, and this is what's driven me the most insane, is the fact that, you know, well, it's the Ole Miss job, and it's viewed as a pejorative. I disagree. If the only thing that they're going to have to deal with is they lose this year's bowl ban, they lose, you know, roughly 15 scholarships, that's now a job in the SEC West. And everyone will go, well, it's in the West, it's competitive, and you're the runt, you know, going for the hind teat. Whatever, I don't care. To me, it's an SEC job that's going to pay somewhere between, or let me phrase it, it could pay $4 million. And everyone thinks that coaches view jobs in the fashion of a name and whatnot. Coaches are like all of us, man. $4 million doesn't talk to coaches. $4 million shouts at coaches. Especially, you know, people laugh about, well, how did South, you know, if that's true, then why did South Carolina get Will Muschamp? Well, that's completely neglecting the fact that South Carolina had tried to build a baseball stadium and upgrade facilities, and South Carolina's athletic department was damn near bankrupt. I mean, they were broke. They went to go get Rich Rodriguez at the time, and now you can laugh now, Rich. But at the time, Rich Rodriguez had gotten Arizona to an Access Bowl, and Rich Rodriguez was hot again. And they brought in Rich Rodriguez. Rich Rodriguez got on the plane. You don't get on the plane unless you're taking the job. And then he saw the actual dollar figures, and he said, all of a sudden he gets cold feet because he wasn't getting SEC money that he thought he was going to get. That's not going to be the case here at Ole Miss. And then other people want to use the example, well, what Georgia had to go get Kirby Smart. Georgia ran into the same problem that, in my opinion, a lot of schools that aren't able, that, you know, they say we want to be a big boy, they didn't put their money where their mouth is. They got scared because of a Georgia boy, Kirby Smart, becoming a hot name, and they were afraid they weren't going to be able to get their Georgia boy if he went and got another job. And in my opinion, they made a panic decision. And if it works out and Kirby keeps recruiting at this level, by all means. But those aren't applicable arguments.
Yeah, I agree completely. One of the things that frustrates me with some of the Ole Miss people is the whole, we can't do any better than him.
That Why was not? That, in my opinion, that same. You, that was what drove me. When we talk about a strange place to cover, that was what drove me insane. You had this desire to be a big boy, and you can't. This, they're, these are mutually exclusive. In the few, or if you're saying we have, you know, this great program, we're in the SEC, we're putting guys in the NFL, we have this campus. If you're saying all of these things, and then you're saying we can't do any better than Hugh Freeze, then you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. Like, you're still dealing in an inferiority complex, and that was, you know, why that was why I got driven insane.
What's funny to me about Ole Miss, we're going to move on from it in just a minute, but it's probably what a lot of people want to hear us talk about. What's funny to me about the Ole Miss thing is I look at Hugh Freeze, and if I'm an Ole Miss fan, what I take from the Hugh Freeze era is this. Here's this guy that had very little head coaching experience. He took over a train wreck. He did it with an over the course of 5 years, on balance, average to slightly below average recruiting staff.
Below average. I'll say it for you.
Okay.
It was a below average. Like, that was what was amazing.
At the beginning, he had McGriff and those guys.
Sure. For the most part of his tenure, it was a below average recruiting staff. It was a below average, not only recruiting, and in my opinion, it was a below average coaching staff.
Yeah, I was going to say, he had some good tactical coaches, Dan Werner, Jason Jones, but it wasn't a staff full of guys that are that were going to land big gigs elsewhere. And they did it with, all jokes aside, keeping this totally real, a recruiting budget, and we all know what we're talking about, that is not equivalent to the programs that it competes against. And 1 year, they went into the month of November in the playoffs. And the next year, they were 4th and 25 from winning the SEC and still won the Sugar Bowl.
Yes.
I would, if I were an Ole Miss fan, I would look at that and go, holy shit. Pardon my language. What happens if we go out and get a really good coach with a really good staff who knows how to recruit and knows how to develop? We might be better than we think.
It's why,
that's what I would think.
To bookend it, and this has always been my point. As of today, Ole Miss is not a top 10 job. You and I can argue where it is. I think we both probably agree when the dust settles, it's somewhere between a top 15 and a top 20 job. You think that's fair?
I'd probably put it 20 to 25, but fair enough.
Okay.
That you're at some point after the first 15, you're splitting hairs.
Sure. So this was always my opinion. And it rubs people the wrong way, in my opinion, because of an inferiority complex. But I'm willing to listen to an alternative opinion. When you are in that position, you want to be a stepping stone job. Because, in my opinion, history suggests that people have been able to win fairly big at Ole Miss in about a 4 to 5 year run. Inevitably, burnout, because it is a difficult job. Inevitably burn out, and maybe coaches, like everyone else, when they become a little more comfortable, they lose that fire, they lose that edge, and that thing that made them that made them hungry at the beginning, it's subsided. If you would have treated the Ole Miss job in 2014 like, okay, Hugh Freeze came here, he did a pretty good job, but let's get real here, people. We know that 2013 class is top heavy. The 2014 class isn't good at all. And, you know, there's some smoke and mirrors here. If we let him walk, number one, we save money. Florida's going to have to pay us to take him. And so, financially, you're in a better position to go and hire another coach similar to Hugh Freeze. Because, in reality, this is what's always driven me insane. By and large, I've done the math. Statistically, most coaches coach to the level of what a certain job is. Occasionally, you'll have coaches that are probably better fits at a certain spot, and maybe they win a little bit bigger, and then occasionally you'll have bad fits and they lose a little bit. But there's, for every Nick Saban and Urban Meyer, there's Kevin Sumlin. There's, you know, you go through regard, you know, I don't know how you feel about Gus Malzahn, but there's the Kevin Sumlins of the world that, you know, they were able to catch lightning in the bottle, win big. But overall, basically, you know, Texas A&M in the Big 12 was, you know, an 8-4 type job. And that's kind of what it's been here in the SEC. And so he's kind of winning to that level. And so if you're Ole Miss, you recognize, all right, these guys have had a lot of success for this 4-5 year window. Let's go get the next guy. All right. Now we're developing a pattern in which that guy comes in, has his 4-5 year run. You let him walk. Then another guy comes in. You do it in a 4-5 year window. And after 10 years, you've now created a job that has won at a big time level. And you've taken your job from a top 25 job to arguably at that point, a top 10 job. And at that point, you can go and try to find, the next Urban Meyer, the next Nick Saban, whoever, you know, you go and find that because you've now solidified that your job is like you've raised your job by treating it as a stepping stone. Instead, there's this mentality of we have to find a guy that wants to be here forever. I just don't think that works.
Yeah, I don't. That's not if I'm the guy making the hire. Hey, how much do you want to be here? Will you stay forever? Is never part of my conversation.
For him to leave, he had to have done a great job.
Yeah, you have to win. You have to win to leave. And if you win enough and then you become the head coach at Ohio State, cool. I'm going to go get another really good coach. Because now I can sell to that guy, hey, turn this job into a lot. A, you're going to make a lot of money here. B, you obviously can win here. C, if you decide you want to move on, the last guy went to Ohio State.
It's why people can laugh if I make the comparison, but I swear to God I believe it because it's relatively comparable. Arkansas State is so smart in what they do with their football yes. coaches. Yes. And they're now on their, you know, Brian Anderson, who's there now, is Brian Anderson, right? Because they had two Brians in a row. It's Anderson. Brett Anderson, sorry. You look at what they've done. They're now going to have their fourth coach that's won at the same level they've been winning after Arkansas State spent a decade being just god-awful. And to me, if you're Ole Miss, you don't – when Ole Miss maxes out, Ole Miss can't compete with Alabama. They can't compete with LSU. They can't compete, in my opinion, with Auburn, presuming all of those schools are maxed out as well. That's the caveat I throw. So you have to be smarter. And in my opinion – that's how you do it.
The podcast brought to you by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999 is the number. Call Greg Jones. Greg's awesome. You can commiserate with him about Hull City. And then after that, you can check out all of the fresh cuts. It's the place to go in Oxford for the freshest of fresh cuts. The bone-in ribeye, my personal favorite. The dry-aged bone-in ribeye is just... I'm having it Saturday. I'll put it that way. They have lunch catering menu as well. Pork, chicken, great sausages, whether you want summer sausage or you want sausages that you can throw on the grill. Chicken sausage, the chicken jalapeno is my favorite. As I tell you, I love the Swayze sausage, the harvest apple. There's all sorts that are just fantastic. You try a few, pick the one that you like, and you'll be happy that you did. Again, it's LB's Meat Market, 662-259-2999. When you go in, there's a beer fridge on your left. Grab a six-pack of your choosing, and then tell Greg you heard about it on you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack of craft beers is just $6. Can't beat that anywhere in Oxford either. The podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you are getting local underwriting that understands your market. Community Mortgage is also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if the rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's J-Lowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Currently, Ben Brown and his team are looking to hire some part-time and full-time sales team members across Texas and the Southeast to join their team. They offer extensive training, support, and the best products and pricing in the industry. Whether you're looking to supplement your current income or find a better career opportunity, email Ben at benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. They're looking for motivated individuals with some sales experience, a business degree, or those who are close to completing their business degree who have a passion to serve small business owners. They have an exceptional uncapped commission structure and are an equal opportunity employer. Email Ben today. Podcast also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. Strategic Partners in Media is a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. SPM works with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups. They have a simple logic. They find a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that will eventually do business with the client. SPM focuses first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whether that is through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM always finds the right path forward. SPM mastered their craft in the rough and tough political advertising world. They bring to the table decades of advertising experience, plus a unique perspective to advertising and a tireless work ethic rooted in their days of nonstop campaigns. To reach them, email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. All right, Jeffrey, I'm curious. Don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I'm fascinated by it. The Tubby Smith experience in Memphis has been an absolute nightmare. It's been a train wreck. It was a bad hire. Tubby was once a really good coach. I'm not sure he understands the Memphis dynamic. I'm not sure he's young and vigorous and energetic enough to do what you have to do in Memphis to really make that work, both on the court and in the stands. Yet he's got a really good contract, bully for him. That's been in the news a little bit. Is there a scenario where at the end of this season, Memphis, which already had to pay off
Josh Pastner.
Yeah. Is there a scenario where they have to say, screw it, we can't be this bad, let's eat this contract?
Couple of things. Number one, Tubby is a very solid coach. I think the fact that Tubby is such a good man always gives him the benefit of the doubt. But the fact remains, while he's had success at a lot of places, and success, I mean, he's gotten to the tournament, he still hasn't been to the second weekend since he was at Kentucky. And, yeah, you know, it's Kentucky, as you and I and John Calipari like to say. Like, there have been lots of coaches there that got to the second weekend. And so they're in this weird dynamic in which Josh left the program to where people essentially were, like, striking against, you know, attendance went from, you know, 14,000 in FedEx Forum on average to, you know, 7,000, 8,000. And now, you know, the figures come out. It was a bit of a story. Memphis has started calculating attendance a little differently. So people jumped and ran with the fact that attendance was down like 20%. It was the lowest it's ever been since, I think, like 1981. And so people jumped and ran on that. But in reality, the actual butts in the seats, they're actually a little bit higher than Josh's last year. So this started, as you say, with, at the end with Josh, it became such a bad situation. But the thing that's important to note is that financially, Memphis, like, that is what's so fascinating about the world of college athletics that's almost changed overnight. The difference between Power Five and the Group of Five is only going to widen. Memphis just had to finance the building the football practice facility. They had to finance it because they didn't have the money. And so the way that the contract works with Tubby is that he would be owed, let's say he got fired this year, I think he would have 3 years left, he'd be owed close to $9 million. Don't hold me specifically to $9 million, but it's close to $9 million, somewhere around there.
Okay.
What's interesting, though, is his contract was just released. They had not a handshake agreement. They had a piece of paper that was acting as his contract. Like, it was an agreement of payment. I don't know the legal term for it, but they were operating under that. They finally negotiated a contract, and one of the stipulations in this contract is that now, if they make the decision to buy out Tubby Smith, instead of having to pay him what's left on the contract, you know, if he had 2 years, instead of having to pay him, you know, or let's say 3 years, instead of having to pay him $9 million over 3 years, They added a stipulation in the contract that says they will get 2 times remaining what is left on the contract in either years or months. Therefore, if he got fired this year, instead of having to pay him $9 million over 3 years, they would get to pay him $9 million over 6. That's interesting because that's never been done with Memphis before. So you look at it right now, I think financially Memphis will be in the same position they were in with Josh. They knew it was over with Josh well before they pulled the trigger and told him, hey, please go find another job and make this easier on us. I think they know where they are with Tubby, but financially they're not in a position to where they can A, afford to pay him even with the stipulation in the contract of doubling the amount of time and go hire another big time coach.
It's one of those coaching searches a year ago that never really got told.
It was a fascinating, the rumors are, and I think they're fairly decent. I'm sure I would, if I got held to the fire, they would get me on some technicalities. But the way that I understand it is that Tom Bowen, who's the athletic director, Tom Bowen went and interviewed for the Cal athletic director position when it came open. That David Rudd, who's the president of the university, was very upset by that because he asked Tom flat out, you know, are you doing this? And Tom said, no, I'm not going to interview. And so it created hard feelings. And so David Rudd, when the decision came to get rid of Josh and go get a new coach, David Rudd basically said, I'm going to go hire the coach. And he didn't even let Tom wanted to bring in an associate AD, or maybe he had an associate AD that had, and basically that position was removed. And so there was all these behind the scenes, you know, pettiness. And so David Rudd goes to make his hire, and they tried to get Greg Marshall, and then I want to say maybe Buzz Williams, and then the number that was spit back from the coaching search firm was what would it take to get them, they couldn't afford. So then the first name that was spat out after that was Tubby Smith. And David Rudd made the decision, oh, Tubby would be great. You know, Josh's reputation was great recruiter, not a strong basketball mind. Tubby has a reputation, maybe not being the most dynamic recruiter, but he's an outstanding basketball coach. You'll get an African-American at Memphis, and that will play well. Well, that probably, like, to me, the biggest mistake that Memphis made was not getting rid of Josh. In my opinion, like, that ship had sailed. Josh Pastner, it just wasn't going to work here in Memphis. They compounded the decision by making the wrong hire.
Yeah.
And if some rumors are true, I think Tom Bowen was trying to go off and make his own hire, and it's just David Rudd beat him to hiring Tubby Smith before Tom Bowen wanted to make his hire.
Yeah, and I can't say what I think, but I think I know who Bowen wanted to hire.
I think I do too, and I think it would have been a better hire.
Tubby Smith? Absolutely.
Yes. I struggle with Tubby because, like, for instance, for my job, I live fairly close to where Tubby does his coaches show, and I think I have this bold strategy of if I'm going to talk about and cover someone, I think it's best to kind of hear what he has to say. And I know
sure,
coaches' shows can be somewhat propaganda, but, you know, I want to have an idea of what I'm talking about. And Tubby's very forthright in those settings because he's so honest about his team. And so to me, it's the situation where I find myself wanting him to succeed, but my eyeballs tell me this just isn't going to work out. I mean, you know,
he's a wonderful human being.
Yes, he's a good man. And so
he's an absolutely great guy. You'd love for your kid to play for Tubby Smith.
Yes. The problem with him is the staff is so bad. His assistants are so bad. I mean, you know, he's got his son on the staff. Joe Esposito is basically the only coach that's out on the recruiting trail, and Joe works his ass off, and there's no two ways about it. Joe works his ass off, but the problem is most of Joe's contacts are in junior college, And I just don't think you can build a competitive basketball team recruiting in junior college.
No. And he's older. It's just it's harder. College basketball is like college sports. Unless you are at a great blue blood program with an incredible staff, it is a younger man's game.
Well, look at what LSU did. Will Wade in the coaching community doesn't have the greatest reputation because he's not perceived to be a good basketball coach, not a good mind. But Will gets it, man. It's about players. Will went out and got a bunch of guys with AAU ties, and he's signing big-name prospects, and then Will figured it out. Hey, at the end of the day, I'm the one that gets paid the most, and I'm the one that gets the win-loss record. Go get some players and then hire a guy to be your X's and O guy, and then I'll sit on the bench and take all the credit.
Absolutely.
That's what
Would you rather have five great players and be an average coach or five average players and be a great coach? Give me the great players, man.
It's the same thing. It's like I always laugh, and I know Calipari's a lightning rod for people, but I always look back to – I find the man fascinating. He's an interesting character from so many fronts. But, you know, he talks about when he was first coming up in coaching, you know, the reputation is John's not a good X's and O coach. And he always tells the story that, you know, when I was in my first jobs as an assistant, I could draw up the greatest inbound plays. I could have all these innovative sets and set plays and whatnot. But there's a ceiling. You can only out-coach someone to a certain extent. And then I realized it's about the players. And then people laugh. His biggest deal about his coaching philosophy now is, I have such better talent than everyone. Over-coaching them could be a detriment to me. They're more athletic. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're faster. I need to get out of their way and let them take advantage of that. And that's why, you know, he has a national title to show for it. And then, you know, he doesn't get to the Final Four every single year, but there's a reason why they're the Elite Eight every year.
Yeah. How many times do you watch a college or NBA game where the inbounds play or the set that's being called breaks down, a defense plays well, and late in the shot clock, a guy just goes, you know what, I got it, give me the ball.
It's why I laugh. A guy that, in my opinion, has a reputation of being a bad coach is Stan Van Gundy. But if you watch, like, Stan Van Gundy throughout the course of his career, he's phenomenal in, like, timeouts and set plays and, like, inbounds plays. But it doesn't matter. The Pistons stink.
Yeah, they don't have that guy at the NBA level who can just go get points.
Exactly.
They don't have Kevin Durant. They don't have Steph Curry. They don't have Chris Paul.
On the flip side, not to cut you off, but Scott Brooks, his reputation at Oklahoma City is, this guy's not a good bench coach, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He can't run an offense. Well, he did have Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Overcoaching those guys might have been a problem. He gets the job in Washington where, while he has some really good players, he doesn't have a Westbrook and he doesn't have a Kevin Durant. Now you see him when he gets to run his actual offense and stuff. Guy just won Coach of the Year, right?
Yeah, he did a great job with John Wall and Bradley Beal.
Got Otto Porter paid.
Yeah, he got Otto. He got Otto Potter. Loves
Potter. Scott. Sorry.
Yeah, he loves Scott Brooks. All right, we're going to get to one more thing in just a minute, then we're going to wrap up. First, let me tell you that the podcast is also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any make or model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, ComerHeatingAndAir.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast. You get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. The podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish you want to catch. This time of the year, snapper and cobia are the most popular trips to take. The snapper season in Mississippi runs through Labor Day, so you want to get to that here soon. Another popular trip for visitors who don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout and triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com. his Facebook page, or you can call John 228-348-7817. Last 5 minutes or so here, Jeffrey. Does anybody, A, want to win the National League Central, and B, does it really even matter when you look at the Nationals and the Dodgers?
It's my favorite division in baseball for this reason only this year, and shows you the cyclical nature of baseball. The Cubs, what, won 99 games 1 year, and they were in the wild card game. And, you know, this year, though, the reason why I love the Central is it's not going to be won. It's just going to be lost, and someone's going to be left standing. And I love when a division is not won, it's lost. And so we're right there. Like, I cannot wait. Like, this is electric. Like, Cardinals now are a game and a half back, and I think, what, we're like 2 games over .500.
Yeah, I'm looking for the standings because Pittsburgh's the funniest story in the whole division. Pittsburgh thought they were out. They actually sold off some pieces. And Pittsburgh, as we tape this, is 56 and 58. They're down 2-1 at the end of one in Detroit today. And they are a whopping 3.5 out of first.
Oh, they're Costanzing. They're basically like when they bought all the pieces, they weren't able to make it happen. But now, like, they're finding out, like, whatever their instinct was, do that, and then you'll start winning. If your instinct is to buy pieces, you're going to start losing. Now their instinct was to sell pieces, and now they're starting to win. They're Costanzing. I think the thing that's great, though, is we need to discuss the power of the pussy. Because right now, that cat, literally, that cat at St. Louis last night was the highlight of, like, that's been the highlight of my baseball season, because I've probably watched this team. I've probably seen 60-something games. I'm going to St. Louis this weekend, and the highlight of my season is that kitten, or I don't know how, I couldn't really tell. Like, it looked like a kitten.
Like, it was a young cat.
Tough, tough break for that kitten, because we got to talk about this. He's trotting around in the outfield, and, like, that is, like, that has to be for him, like, eternal bliss. Like, he's in a field full of grass, all essentially to his lonesome. Like, life cannot get any better. And it's just a great metaphor for life. You're going around, everything's A-okay. Boom. You get snatched up by a field maintenance guy, and your life's just completely bop, it's gone.
Yeah, and then,
and then Yadi hits the grand slam. I loved also, shout out to the left fielder of the Royals who just didn't even, like, he did not even turn. Like, he hit it so hard that it wasn't like a towering, massive home run, but it was just like a missile, and, like, he didn't even, like, put his glove up or anything. Like, I kept wondering, I was like, why is he not running after it? And then I see it land, like, three rows up, and I was like, oh, because he knew it was gone.
Yeah, there's no reason to run. So, who do you think? Who wins the division?
Cubs.
I don't think they do. I think the Contreras injury is the killer.
Who does? Like, at the end, they're better. Like,
I actually think St. Louis is going to win the division.
Yeah, the Cardinals stink. Like, they're not good. They don't do anything well. Although I will give them credit.
No one in the division's good.
For the first,
Milwaukee's not good. Milwaukee has come down to earth. If you told me that one team in the four is going to just fold, I would say that's the Brewers. And if I'm them, I'm not upset. If I'm Milwaukee and I'm Craig Counsell at the end of this thing, I say, you know what? We played meaningful August baseball with this young team. We didn't trade away any pieces. We didn't panic. They've got some really nice young arms. That young center fielder's a stud. I love him. If I'm Milwaukee, I'm pretty pleased. If I'm Pittsburgh, I'm asking myself, what are we doing with this group? And if that's why I don't know. It feels like St. Louis for some reason.
But I think you're letting the name on the jersey impact it. Like, I think you just think, like, inevitably, like, you're thinking that the Cardinals will just kind of find a way.
They pitch pretty well night in and night out.
They start well. They start well, and I will give them credit. They have abandoned, thank God, it took till August to give up on Brett Cecil, who, like, is just freaking awful. And they've now just decided, all right, it's O and it's Rosenthal, and we'll figure it out. And so I give them credit. At least they're doing that.
I do wonder if their bullpen gets a little tired down the stretch. But I don't know.
The innings are starting. You can tell me now, the innings are starting to take their toll on Mike Leake.
Yeah.
Last night, I don't think he's gotten out of the sixth inning. I think since July.
I don't think it matters though, because whoever wins that division plays Washington.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's the thing. I don't think it matters because to me, the Nationals and the Dodgers are so much better, and I don't even think. I just think when you get the Nationals and the Dodgers are just so much more complete. I think the Dodgers are the best team in baseball. Like I've spirit of full disclosure.
And 33.
Dude, I've been betting them for the last month and a half, and I'm now looking to buy a house.
The Colorado Rockies are 16 games over 500. 16 games over 500. The Colorado Rockies, if they were in the National League Central, would have a 5.5 game lead over the Cubs.
Yeah.
They are 15.5 out.
Yeah. I mean, that's how, dude, what are they, like in their last, like they're like 51 or like 44-7 in their last 51 games or something like that.
They don't lose.
I know. It's the best.
I'm sure if you were betting on them all year long, you are really happy.
I'm not joking, Neil. I'm looking to buy a house.
Yeah, 71% winning percentage. 0.708.
They're awesome.
The Nationals are 22 games over 500. They have a 14-game lead in the National League East, and the Nationals would be 12.5 games out of first in the West.
It's why when you match up the Dodgers and the Nationals, I think the starters, they can compete for sure, but it's that even though, like, I give credit, the Nationals knew their bullpen was an issue. They tried to get help. It just hasn't worked.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers' bullpen is just so much better.
The Dodgers, I'll give them credit too. They did what the Cubs did last year. You could tell, hey, this should be our year. Let's not take any chances. Let's shore everything up. And they did. They really improved themselves, if that was possible, with the deadline. And if they win it, frankly, they deserve it.
I should make the note. I am operating under the presumption that Clayton Kershaw, when he comes back, will be Clayton Kershaw.
Although I'll say the bizarre thing, which is without Clayton Kershaw, it hasn't fazed them.
Yeah, but you got to have a number one in the playoffs. You and I know that.
Yeah, but I think they have two number ones. I think Alex Wood's a one. And I think Yu Darvish is a one.
Yeah, but they're not. They ain't Kershaw.
No, they're not Kershaw. Kershaw's the best pitcher in the game, and when he's on, he's unhittable. They won't have to lean on him in the playoffs the way they did last year, because by that game six of the NLCS, he was on fumes, and the Cubs hit him, and that was that. All right, bud. Listen, I appreciate it as always. You don't know this, but you're going to come back on next week, and we're going to do an NFL preview with Jeffrey Wright.
All right.
We were going to get to NFL, and we just simply ran out of time. So we'll get to NFL next week, and we'll do how the NL Central turns and go from there. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it, my man.
That's Jeffrey Wright. I'm Neil McCready. That does it for this Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. We'll be back soon with another version. Until then, take care.